Hello, my name's Bernadette Russell, and welcome to How to Be Hopeful, Episode 7, a podcast all about hope, how to find it, and how to keep hold of it once you've found it. This week, the week beginning the 18th of May 2020, is Mental Health Awareness Week. And the theme of this year's Mental Health Awareness Week is kindness. So I thought there was no better person to speak to than my dear friend and colleague, Ben Hogbin. Now, Ben and I met initially in very unusual circumstances, which he'll talk to you about shortly, or you'll hear him talking about shortly. But just by way of introduction, this is the sound of Ben running past my house during the London Marathon, and he, as he ran past, me and his wife and his daughter cheered and hooped and hollered for him, and you can hear that right now. I'd been doing what we do every year, which is display lots of messages to runners who are running the marathon. We absolutely adore the marathon every year. It's such a fantastic display of kindness and generosity and fun and joy and silly costumes from everybody. And it was a really fantastic way to meet and make a new set of friends. And so without further ado, here's me chatting to Ben about mental health and hope and kindness. Hello, Ben Hogbin.
Hello.
How are you today at this very moment, rainy moment?
In this very moment, I feel kind of privileged.
Do you?
I've listened to a couple of your previous podcasts, and yeah, I think how I'm feeling now is quite privileged that I've been asked to come on and talk to you.
I'm privileged, but we'll talk about that anyway. We'll keep saying that to each other. No, I'm really pleased you did it. It's really, really great. And you're a big part of the story in way, some ways you know and some ways you probably don't know. Would you mind just telling the story of how you and I met?
Yeah.
Think it's a good one. It's a big part of my story as well.
So it was the day before the London Marathon in 2018. I just arrived with my wife and daughter in an Airbnb, which just happened to be, now I know, on your street. And me being me, I kind of needed to get the bearings. So we went out for a walk to see which way the start line was. So I knew where I was going the following morning. And then there was this lady in her garden painting posters.
I still painting at that point?
You were still painting. So I just walked past, and I wouldn't normally say anything to a stranger. I'd kind of just keep my head down. But I'd been making a conscious effort recently to be more social to strangers and whatnot. So I just said, wow, that looks brilliant. Looks like I'm going to need that encouragement tomorrow, because you were putting posters up encouraging people. And you turned around and said, oh, would you like one? I've got one left. So naturally, I said, yeah, that'd be wonderful. We started chatting. You then pulled your husband down to give me directions to where the start line was. And then you very kindly invited my wife and daughter around to your house the next day, because the race goes right outside the front of your door. And I took a selfie with you to put on Twitter. The marathon happened. It was the only point in the whole race that I was able to see my wife and my daughter, which, looking back now, was a huge thing, because I knew exactly where to find them. So I'm eternally grateful for that. So then the race happened. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye or anything like that. And then it was a couple of weeks later that I was sat in my office, and up popped your name on my Twitter feed, and you'd been tagged in I think somebody was in a Waterstones in New York or something and had tagged you in a photo of the Little Book of Kindness. So I clicked on it, realised that you were the author of the Little Book of Kindness. I think I Amazon Primed it. It came the next day, had a read of it. And it was just like, wow. And I think I'd probably reach back out to you at that point to say, I can't believe you're the author of the Little Book of Kindness. But it made so much sense that you did an act of kindness for a stranger, which, you know, a couple of years on, we would never have known the stories that have come out of that, that you've obviously come on one of the RAP courses and you've come down to my daughter's school to do some a day on kindness and things. So, and then here we are. So just...
Yeah, no, it was fantastic for me as well, Ben, because every year since about 2003, I think it is, we do a shout out on social media and ask for strangers, because I figure people might be running and they might not necessarily have anyone supporting them on route. So that's what I was doing, sort of painting strangers' names. But what was really lovely about meeting you and your family was that I don't normally meet the people, really. You know, I just have to hope they've seen it. I don't see them. And also really lovely part of a beginning of a friendship, which was really fantastic and lovely to spend time with your family. And also really great introduction to rap, which we'll come and talk. I don't mean hip hop.
We'll
explain that in a minute. But to your work, which is really fantastic and has been a really positive influence on me, so it seems like a fortuitous meeting. Could you, just before we go on to talking about rap, could you talk about what happened to you or changed for you, if anything, after that marathon year, in terms of your sort of trajectory?
Not long after, I'd been doing an awful lot of reflecting. When you're training for a marathon, you spend an awful lot of time on your own. And I'd been training for a good sort of 6 months in the lead up to the marathon. I managed to complete the marathon and then decided that I was trying to figure out why I'd ended up just wanting to start running to begin with, because I'd always hated running. I thought it wasn't for me. I started running and I could see lots of benefits. And just after the marathon, I decided, and it kind of came to me, that the reason I was where I was because the previous year I'd come across something, or 18 months before, I'd come across something called the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. And I was able to develop my own RAP. And it made me stop and pause and think about my own wellness and what that looked like for me. And I kind of realized that I needed to make some big changes. And as a result of that, I sold one of my business, and that gave me more time to focus on me, which then subsequently meant I went out running. That led on to the marathon. And then literally, I think it was the following month, I decided to set up a new venture called Discover Wellness, which would be my kind of way of sharing RAP. Now I'm a RAP facilitator with others. So that's kind of what happened literally after the marathon. I decided that was kind of my next direction, really.
That's amazing. It's quite an amazing journey. Would you be able to sort of introduce the idea of RAP to people that are listening who are sort of curious?
Yeah. So the Wellness Recovery Action Plan, or RAP as it's known for short, was developed by a lady in America in the late 90s, Mary Ellen Copeland. She developed it with people who were struggling struggling with their mental health. And it's basically a framework. It gives you the framework and tools to be able to keep yourself well. There are the five key concepts of the recovery of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy and support. And then there are six different parts of RAP, which is daily maintenance plan, triggers, early warning signs, when things break down, crisis plan and post-crisis plan. But there are also these magic things called wellness tools, which we already all have. We just don't necessarily label them as wellness tools. And they're the things that that we do to keep ourselves well and make ourselves feel better when we're feeling down. And they really underpin everything that Rap's about.
I think it's really beautiful. It's really rich, but it's also quite simple.
Yeah.
So even though I was only able to do one session with you, partly because you and your sister Abby explained it so clearly, but also because the materials are really clear, I think, and because it empowers you to think about those things yourself rather than feeling like you're receiving wisdom, I think that's really great because it's facilitated in that way. And what are your ambitions or intentions for it, sort of at the moment?
Well, I think at the start, I really do believe Rap is for anyone. I really do believe that, and that was kind of the pathway I was setting out, was that I was going to offer this to anyone, but quickly realised that in order for it to become kind of viable and sustainable and something that I could do as a living, I would need to kind of rethink that perhaps. And it was about a year ago that I decided that I wanted to work with the NHS. My wife's a children's community nurse, and I know the kind of the pressures there they were under. And towards the end of last year, I was really fortunate to work with a really forward-thinking, open-minded clinical commissioning group. And we did a wrap with their team, and that's had a huge impact on not only the individuals, but how they think and work collectively as a team and how they're rethinking about their culture of an organisation. And then obviously this pandemic's happened, and it's kind of bringing, you know, NHS and the frontline workers to the forefront of everyone's mind, which for me is what I kind of believed all along, you know, that there is a need there. There is a need out there for the NHS to be looking after their staff. So we're in a kind of transition period where, you know, I can't deliver Rap because Rap is normally delivered in a group, but we've kind of now looking at delivering wellness check-ins and things online. So we've been doing some of that with the group. So nothing's going to stop us, even a pandemic. But
glad to hear it.
But yeah, it all kind of feels like it's meant to happen. That, you know, I felt an urge to work with the NHS a year ago, and then this happens, and it's just kind of brought it all to the forefront how valuable our NHS is.
Yeah, absolutely, and how much they need support. You know, so it's fantastic that's been offered. That's on offer. We'll come back to that a little bit in a moment, because obviously COVID's had an enormous effect on everything and everyone. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about hope, which, you know, from when I came to do the course, actually, I whispered to you, Ben, I'm writing a book about hope.
You did?
Didn't I?
You did.
And so, because I was really excited to see that one of the main principles of Rap is hope. Could you talk to me, if it's not too large a question to answer, how, for you, hope is connected to wellness and positive mental health, and how also you think we might foster hope in or for ourselves at difficult times?
Yeah, there's a lot there. I'll try and unpick it.
It's two questions, really. So let's go with, can you tell me how for you hope is connected to wellness?
Yeah. As you point out, that, yeah, hope is the first key recovery concept. And I think it's important to say that recognize that hope means different things to different people at different times. For me personally, there's kind of like three ingredients I think I feel like I need to have hope, and that's a sense of control, in that I have a sense of control in my own life, my own fate, that I have a belief in the value of something, so I have sort of a purpose or a goal, something to work towards, and the third part is that I feel part of a community. So I feel part of something that other people value the same thing. And when I've kind of got those three ingredients, I feel like I've got hope. And then when I've got hope, then I have a purpose, and that then makes me feel well. I've got a purpose to get up in the morning. I've got a drive, you know, drive, direction to travel. So that's how I personally feel about hope, is those three parts. But just to pick up on your, was it second question?
How might we foster hope in ourselves at difficult times?
I think it's important to recognise that hope is all around us. You just have to look for it. And I say that, it might sound a bit cheesy, but it genuinely is. And I think it's about starting by appreciating what you have, and that's no matter how small that is. And even try kind of writing it down and being grateful for these things can give you a sense of hope. You know, like a roof over your head or food on the table, family around you, neighbours, just listening to the birds. You know, that's something to actually embrace, and that in itself will hopefully foster some form of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really beautiful to point out that sometimes that's all we can manage when we don't feel great, isn't it? To sort of say, oh, well, there's a patch of blue sky, or, you know, my sister's on the other end of the phone. I think it's really important to remind ourselves that we've always got something, however small that thing is. I'm interested, I didn't send this as a question for you, but I'm really interested in Ben. And
you're going to throw me a curveball.
No, it's not at all, actually. Just picking up on something you were saying. You know when you said that you had to identify for yourself what hope meant?
Yeah.
And that was really clear, I think. As a facilitator, is that sort of part of your job to facilitate, to help everybody find what hope means for them?
Yeah, we're there as a kind of a guide, as facilitators. We're there as a guide. We share the curriculum with participants, and then it's up to those participants to find hope. And I think the best kind of way I can describe RAP is that it's like a puzzle. So we give you the framework, the outside pieces. We give you the outside pieces, and then we also give you the middle pieces. But it's up to you to find out how those pieces fit together, and I think that's the best way I can describe it. And I think if you can also acknowledge that the puzzle's probably never going to be complete. You might just get to the last piece, and you might have to move a few pieces around. Do you know? And that's the beauty of it. It's not something that you can complete in two sessions and in a weekend or something. It's ongoing. You live it and breathe it, and it constantly evolves and changes.
Yeah, I have to say, I found it incredibly helpful, really, really, really helpful, and really creative as well, actually. It's a very creative process. Going a little bit back to Corona, do you think that this current period of the lockdown and the pandemic has made self-care and looking after ourselves even more important? Has it become more important to you?
I would say 100% is giving people time to stop and think, more so than they probably ever would have done in the past. It's given a lot of people time to reflect on the relationships with themselves, good or bad. I would say for me, it has been really important. I've certainly had to revisit and rejig my daily routine, for sure, because now I'm trying to work and homeschool two children. But it's also given me the chance to kind of have another look at my wellness tools, and look at what are the things that keep me well and what are the things that make me feel better when I'm not feeling great. So this period of time has really, I mean, I'm constantly thinking about it anyway, but I think this whole situation has just acted as a catalyst for that for me. But also for other people that perhaps have never really thought about themselves because they've been on the go. I'm quite fortunate that I'm kind of in tune and have been working on that for a long time now. But for a lot of people, this potentially could be the first opportunity they've kind of stopped and taken a breath, really, and tried to figure out, you know, what makes them tick. And that's one of the key questions we ask in RAP is, you know, what does wellness actually look like for you? When was the last time you ever asked yourself that? So to know what you're like when you're unwell, you need to know what you're like when you're well. So that might well be a sensible place to start for a lot of people right now is, you know, what does wellness look like for me?
Yeah. And again, I was thinking the other day, I thought actually perhaps some of the restrictions, the way they've sort of shrunk our worlds a little bit, I know for me that's made it easier. Like, I haven't been able to go out, I've been shielding, so I've been gardening because I couldn't go out, and then I've discovered actually how much I enjoy that, which I might not have discovered had I still been tearing around. So
yeah,
there are definitely some really useful discoveries in that, although I know I'm in an extremely privileged
position. Well, I think it was only on the news this afternoon they were talking about why there was no flour. Well, everyone's starting to bake.
Yeah, I know, right?
The British Bake Off should be interested in it. In a lot of competition. But
really good.
I know we joke about it, but that is the, you know, one of the beauties of that is that people are starting to explore what hobbies and interests, and that's a major part of the RAP process, is exploring what are you interested in, what are your hobbies, and for people that haven't had a lot of time, they're going to have more time and to think about what it is, and they might well be picking up. I mean, I've downloaded a computer game that I used to play when I in my teens. I didn't think I'd ever get a chance to do that ever again, but actually I'm finding doing that is a good distraction, and the kids actually now get involved in that as well, which is even better.
I think also I do have a few friends who are sort of saying, I haven't had any time to do anything, but they've also found it useful because it's reminded them of what they need. So, because there are people who are just wildly busy, aren't they, tearing around, for whom this hasn't been particularly reflective. Mm-hmm. But even my friends that are in that are saying, I've realised actually what I need to do is this. So it still has some sort of therapeutic beneficial effects, I think. You talked to me a little bit, Ben, about the sort of technical digital adjustments to the wellness toolkit and your work in the light of lockdown. Have you noticed, as a facilitator, that it's presented any specific challenges in people's mental health? Anything that's popped up for yourself, actually, or other people that is unusual or more so?
I certainly think from on a personal level, I've really, really had to think about my wellness tools. I find that's my go-to, and that's where I seek a lot of comfort. Is it worth explaining what we define as wellness tools?
I think that'd be amazing, yeah.
So in RAP, these things are referred to as wellness tools, and you have a wellness toolbox. So wellness tools are things that we do to keep ourselves well, make ourselves feel better when we're down. And they need to ideally be simple, safe, inexpensive and accessible. And you can think about breaking them down into the things that relax, distract and energise you. And then once you've done that, you can write a list, and then you can actually, if you find it helpful, create a physical box of items that you can go back and revisit. You don't have to carry it around with you all the time, but actually revisiting it at times like this is actually really useful. So, for example, I know since the lockdowns happened that I knew I liked cleaning beforehand. I knew I liked Cidic Bang, and I knew I liked my pressure washer and my Hoover. However, there is very little now left to clean in the house because I knew it was a distraction tool for me, and a distraction in a good way. But because I've had a lot of time on my hands and to think, I find that really therapeutic. But they're also acknowledging that there are things that would be in my wellness toolbox normally, like playing golf with my friends or having a family barbecue or camping at the weekend, that I would take a lot of comfort from. But because of the lockdown, I can't do it. But I know they're there as and when we come out of this. But I have had to really think about. And another thing, I think you might like this one because you're very creative. I was doing some arts and crafts with my daughter, and we got PVA glue on our hands. And of course, that then took me straight back to smothering PVA glue all over my hands as a kid in school and then picking it off. And
it's amazing. I love doing that.
Yeah, and that in itself was like another relaxed thing. So I've kind of inadvertently found a wellness tool. As sad as it may sound, that PVA glue, but it is actually really... It is just acknowledging that is a wellness tool. Making a cup of tea, the process of making the cup of tea. If you choose to have a Freddo with that cup of tea, then all the better. But it is. So, I mean, you know, cuddling the cat, for example, that's a wellness tool. Having a bath, that's a wellness tool. But by labelling them as a wellness tool and going out for a wellness walk, you kind of just bring it to the forefront of your mind. You're doing this because it makes you well. So for me, in this period of time, that's been my go-to. But I can also appreciate for a lot of people that there's been a real struggle in not having that physical contact with loved ones. That's a big thing.
My friend said to me the other day, which I thought was a really great metaphor, she said, we are all in the same sea, but we're in slightly different boats. Some of us are in leaky dinghies, and some of us are in yachts, and some of us in... I thought, yeah, it's true. We are all in the same sea, in a way that we've never been, I don't think, sort of globally, but we're all in different situations, so...
Yeah, I think that's really important to acknowledge. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a back garden, but if you don't have a back garden and it's boiling hot, then the weather is... That has an opposite effect, perhaps, if you're in a flat that doesn't have the luxury of space and outside. So you're absolutely right. In everyone's in different situations, so what works for one might not work for another.
Yeah, it's good to recognise that. I wondered if there's anything. It might be the same answer, which is absolutely fine. But I'm aware through conversations I've had with friends that there's quite a lot of intensely feeling overwhelmed and anxiety. Some of that's happening for some of my friends who have physical conditions that mean they're reminded of their vulnerability.
Yeah.
And some of that's people that are living on their own and they're just a bit isolated and they're getting super anxious. And I wondered if there was anything that you might recommend from your, as a sort of facilitator, just to cope with high anxiety.
Well, I've found one thing that's been really helpful. One thing that I started literally on January the 1st this year was starting a journal. And that I've found to be really useful at the end of the day, to be able to write down how you're feeling, noticing any positives, things you're grateful for, things that actually haven't worked that you were disappointed about. But just putting it down on a piece of paper, I've found has been really helpful way of being able to kind of close that day down and be able to have a good night's sleep. I think also with that, I've been able to identify, kind of looking back on previous weeks, I've been able to identify different patterns of how I've been feeling and try and pick up, well, why was that? Looking at kind of the external triggers of what might have caused you to feel like that. And then also look at what your wellness tools are in order to put an action plan in place to try and mitigate that as well. I'd also just perhaps highlight the need for connecting with people and connecting with your supporters and just having someone that can listen to you. And, you know, that might be over the phone. It could be by text. It could be by email, or it could be accessing like an online forum or something. But I think if there is that level of anxiety there, it's perhaps to identify it, recognize it, write it down, and then seek kind of a way forward from that, whether that's reaching out to a supporter or doing something from your wellness toolbox that's going to make you feel better in that moment, which is why we suggest people maybe think about wellness tools in those three different categories of relax, distract, and energize, because you might actually need to go for a run rather than have a cup of tea, because that energises you, and vice versa.
Yeah, I found that categorising really helpful, and I'd never sort of come across that before. It's a really useful... It kind of broadens your idea of what those things might be in a really useful way, I think. It makes you think of more, actually, because you've got those sort of subcategories, which I think is brilliant. Thank you for that. That's great. Going back to hope, in your work in relation to hope, do you think that the kind of work that's facilitated by RAP encourages hope for people? And if so, how? You might feel you've already answered it.
I'll probably just go back to what Mary Ellen actually kind of said that RAP, for her, what hope was. And it said that there is much to hope. She says there is much to hope for. You can get well, stay well, and go on to fulfil your life dreams and goals. You can lead a happy and productive life. And that's what essentially the Wellness Recovery Action Plan does. It empowers people with the framework and tools to do exactly that. So yeah, I absolutely hope. If you don't have hope, you don't have anything. So to find hope in something is really, really important.
Yeah. And I think, circling back to what you said earlier, which I think is really powerful about, you know, however bad the day is or however desperate the situation you're in, there's always a tiny thing, isn't there? Or one would hope. There's always the smallest thing you can find to kind of hang on to. I recently read a beautiful book called Man's Search for Meaning, which I'll send to you, which is this man's experiences of being in concentration camp and managing to find hope and meaning in that circumstance. And he was a psychotherapist, so he also had a sort of intellectual take, analytical take on it as well. So, and that really brought that home for obvious reasons. Like, there, you can find it anywhere. You sort of have to switch your way of thinking or focus on that. Like you were saying, find hope in a patch of blue sky or a cup of tea.
Absolutely. You
find it somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that for me, hope for me at the moment is the hope is kindness and kindness is hope. I think for me at the moment, what I've seen in our local community, certainly on a day-to-day basis, and what I see on our social media platforms like Facebook groups that have sprung up, is that there is an awful lot to be hopeful for, and that stems in being kind to yourself but also to others. And I was talking to someone the other day that I out walking, and there being things at the bottom of people's drives where they're having to clear out and they're saying that just take what you need. Then, you know, everyone smiling and saying hello, being polite. That's what I would, what I've always defined as community spirit. And that kindness that I'm seeing locally and on a national level in terms of the appreciation for the NHS is where a lot of people will probably find hope at the moment. And that is, for me, hope is kindness and kindness is hope.
I absolutely agree. And I've been really encouraged by how eager, I always knew it, but everybody's eager to be kind as well. You know, there were so many people signing up to help the NHS, so many people offering to help each other. There's obviously a great appetite for it. So despite what we're sometimes told about each other, I think actually people are really eager to be kind. Do you think that?
And I think that's when I read your book, I think there was an instant connection with what you were saying, what I'd been through and what I wanted to go through in terms of putting yourself first and being kind to yourself, number one, which is what you pick up as your first thing in your book. The second being kindness to others. And that's why anybody that comes on one of the wraps that I facilitate, I give your book, Little Book of Kindness to, because I think there's so many little gems in there. It's all common sense, and wrap is common sense. Your book is common sense. But when you combine that all together and you get people starting to think about the little changes that they can do for themselves, but also for loved ones and neighbours, for strangers, to the community, to the environment, that really acts then as a catalyst for change. And I think, you know, you probably, by writing that book when you did, you're probably ahead of the curve of where a lot of people are now. And I just hope that, you know, moving forward, that we can carry that kind of momentum, you know, into wherever we're going, and that it doesn't fizzle out. But I've never kind of experienced, you know, kindness like it on this scale.
No, me neither. I mean, I'm immensely encouraged and optimistic about that. I want to go back to talking about that because I think it's really important sort of section of the conversation. But just before, just interested if you think, as a facilitator, that this particular time of corona and this lockdown and the pandemic is a learning curve in general for the therapeutic community as a whole, and has it confirmed or challenged any of your beliefs as a facilitator of RAP? So I suppose I'm thinking about, because I know lots of people that are sort of in a very broad sense, either through their art practice or as counsellors or as coaches or as facilitators involved in therapeutic practice. And I'm just wondering if you think it feels like this is our time a little bit, because there's a need for it, and if it's changed anything that you've thought or confirmed anything.
It's confirmed what I already know, is that there was a problem, there's been a problem about people's mental health for a long time. I just happened to stumble across something. I mean, it baffles me that rap's been around for 20 years and it hasn't been embraced the way it should. And I would hope that in 10 years' time that I've made some way in being able to get it to being normal, that people are able to have their own rap. It's just common practice to have your own rap plan. I don't see why you wouldn't have it. It's an evidence-based program as it is. It works. It's worked for me. If it can work for me, it can work for you. So from my point of view, this whole situation has only confirmed my belief that there should be some more proactive approach rather than us being reactive all the time into trying to put more money into mental health crisis services. That actually we should be looking at this as a different way, that kids growing up should have their own rap plan. They should know what their wellness tools are. My kids have got their own wellness toolboxes made out of shoebox, but
that's so cute.
It just seems logical that there is this thing that works, and it shouldn't just be for people that are struggling with their mental health. It should just be for any. It should be open access to anyone, and I hope that I can play my kind of little part in that.
I absolutely agree. I think it's a really interesting time if you think about that kind of thing. If you're, you want to help with improvements in that area, I know there's lots of tragedy and loss around it, but it also feels like a gift in some of the ways that we sort of talked about. And on that subject, Ben, I've been thinking a lot about, whilst acknowledging the grief and the loss and the terrible things, which it's really important to keep hold of and sort of honour and remember, it does feel to me that there's a wealth of positive things that have happened during this period in many, many different ways. And I was interested in if this time's resulted in a positive change for you, either professionally or personally, and what those changes are.
For sure. I actually wrote down, the first thing I wrote down in my journal on the 1st of January this year was the three goals for 2020 were to slow down, be patient and appreciate what I have. And I think it's definitely enabled me to do that. I didn't foresee it being part of me quite like this, but I think it's kind of given me the space to kind of appreciate that. I always get stuck. I think a lot of people have had is that appreciation of family.
And being feeling really emotionally raw, I've cried about something or other since the 14th of March every day. And I feel, if it doesn't sound too sentimental, I feel really grateful for that. That I feel so present and so sort of appreciative and connected. The crying doesn't feel like a bad part of that. Does that make sense? It just feels like. Part of the love.
I just was really surprised. I think I wanted to make a conscious effort at the start of the year to kind of not go racing ahead. And I think professionally I really believe in rap. I really do. And I can get really excited about it, but I can also take too much on, which I know is, if I do that, it's a detriment to myself, which is not good. So when this whole kind of pandemic happened and you instantly reach out to other people to try to connect and make sure that they're okay. But the last couple of weeks, I've really focused on me and what I can control. And that is what's within kind of the four walls. And that's just keeping, you know, my family safe as best I can and appreciating what I have in terms of the time I've got with my kids, because you're never going to be blessed with having this much time. As much as they drive me up the wall, you know, on homeschooling days and things, it's just, I think, the appreciation, especially when you see so much tragedy of people losing their lives in this, that you can't help but just be grateful for what you have. And yeah, I think for me, this period of time is done exactly that. And I didn't know writing this 4 months ago that they were going to be my goals for 2020. That here I am sat at the end of April, really absolutely embracing that as best I can. And yeah, and I guess that's what made me emotional. It's just that the realization that family is everything.
Yeah. It is, and it's wonderful to be able to have the time and the sort of peace and quiet to appreciate that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think that being a sort of positive thing that's happened for you, Ben? Do you see that there's any chance of sort of keeping hold of some of that when it's over? I mean, it's hard at the moment, isn't it? We can't possibly know. I sort of don't imagine that we're going to go back to normal. We'll go forward into a new normal is more likely. But do you think that there might be any sort of permanent changes in terms of sort of the positive things you've experienced, like slowing down, having more time, being able to be grateful for what you've got, spending time with the children? Do you think you'll be able to keep hold of some of that when we're no longer in lockdown?
I hope that I will be able to not forget the feeling I have now of being around them, but also acknowledging that this is totally unique. And yeah, there's going to be a transition period, but I think the whole working from home is something I didn't think I would be able to do. And I think there is a possibility of it being more of a balance from office to working from home and finding a blend that's going to work for not just me, but also the family as well. And I think that is probably, I know from speaking with people, they found it hard to adapt first time in the first few weeks. And now they're like, well, I can't imagine what it's like going back to work and driving in traffic and things. So I think we'll probably see a lot more flexibility in that sense, which can only be a good thing. But I will certainly try to take the best bits out of this, but also acknowledge that actually connecting with people physically and going for a Costa coffee is absolutely, and having my millionaire shortbread is absolutely golden. I mean, those little things, or driving your car, as much as I whinged about being stuck on the M3 in rush hour traffic, just actually driving my car somewhere is going to be something I'm not going to take for granted again. And I think, it's just having that gratitude of where you're at.
It's made the ordinary things somehow seem extraordinary, hasn't it? Like going to get your shortbread, or, you know, that's an amazing thing now, isn't it? I was going to ask you actually, but you might have answered all of the things, so no worries if there's no more. But I'm just asking everyone, what are the things that they've missed doing during this time, that the things they're not able to do that they would like to do?
The millionaire shortbread, driving in the car. I think also put down playing golf with my mates. I don't do it enough anyway, but now the evenings are getting longer, they now would be the opportunity where I'd go and catch up with my friends for nine holes after golf. And I think I knew I wanted to make more of an effort, to the point where actually in next month we were supposed to be going for a a golf weekend away with my friends, and we've obviously had to cancel that. So the effort was there, and I think making the time for, I know we all live close together, but making the time, we've been trying to make a conscious effort of meeting up for a curry night or stuff like that. But actually life really is too short, and you can't take that for granted either. So connecting with my friends, that is a big one as well. But also, also the same goes for family, like a family barbecue, something like just coming over for, in this weather, it'd be over on a Sunday for a barbecue. That's something that I can't wait to do again.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely. It's nice when to think of those things, I think, because we are going to be able to do them again. It's not like trying to imagine the impossible, is it? They're coming back, so it feels like a positive thing to think about.
Absolutely.
So the next one's a big one. And it is, what are your biggest hopes for the future, for yourself, for your community and your family, and for the whole world?
Well, yeah, they are big ones, aren't they?
Yeah, go right there, Ben.
I think for me and my family, it would be that just health, just that we keep well. And that's all I hope for my family. I think if there's one thing, as you probably know from what we've just discussed, that family is number one. And I think for me, keep myself as physically and mentally well as I can, then I can be there for the family. And that's one of the key points of RAP, is that if you don't look after yourself, you're not going to be able to look after those around you. So I need to make sure that I put enough time into me so I can be there for them. In terms of the community, I hope, as we touched on earlier, that the things that we're seeing now are the things that we see next year and the year after. I mean, I've already met neighbours that are a couple of houses further down the road, and I'm working my way down the road as my son learns to ride his bike. But they've already suggested, well, let's have a street party when this is all over. And that takes me back to when we had, is it in 2000, the Olympics, I think we had the Queen's Jubilee, it was, wasn't it? I think we had the street parties then. That's like the community spirit that happened for like a weekend or a week, and then it suddenly disappeared. And I hope that there's more of that to come, certainly in the local community where we are. And in terms of the world, that's a big one, isn't it? Well, I think that there's a vaccine found, and that we can all go back to some level of normality, but learn to be a bit more of appreciative of what we have and each other. And it comes back to being kind to self and to others. That's, for me, I think if we can take that forward, then actually we've done all right out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Bravo to all of that. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about where we can find you, but with you, your thing that's a little bit more complicated, Ben. So I was going to say to you, actually, if somebody was listening and they thought that we'd like to go on a course as a participant, how would they go about that?
They could visit the website, www.discoverwellness.co.uk. There aren't any open courses at the moment for obvious reasons, but hopefully, perhaps in the new year, there'll be some capacity for us to be able to run some open courses. But at the moment, we're doing things online, so keep an eye on the website, and we're also on Twitter. I think it's discover_well, or on Instagram, Discover Wellness. So you can follow updates on that. But we're at the moment trying to connect with people virtually through Zoom in wellness check-ins. So there might be some opportunities to connect through that means for the time being.
I'll make sure that all of that information is in the copy as well. And what about if someone was listening and they thought, I would really like to train and to look into the possibility of becoming a RAP facilitator. How might one go about doing that?
Then you would first of all need to find a 2-day RAP course. There are other RAP facilitators across
the country. No, there's not.
Yeah. there are other rat facilitators across the country. I would just make sure that they are Copeland Centre trained and they have their qualifications refreshed every 2 years. Once you've developed your own rat, then you can attend the 5-day rat facilitator training, which again, there are all across the UK. And then once you've done that, if you're really, really interested in it, then you can become an advanced facilitator like myself. And then you can train the facilitators to become facilitators. Hope that makes sense.
Who trains them? Is it like a never-ending mirror?
No, there are probably 4 gurus in the world. There's a lady called Rona McBriarty who's kind of my mentor and the person that delivered my rap and kind of got me into it. And she is one of only a handful that are able to train the advanced facilitators. So they're quite unique, especially on in the UK. There aren't many of us around advanced facilitators. So if you go on over to America, it's a bit more well known. But over here, it's still quite unique. And hopefully over time, rap will be embraced a little bit more openly.
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to support that because I found it brilliant. I still use it. I was looking at my booklet yesterday. I made my wellness tool box kit. Absolutely loved it. I think it's really appealing if you're creative, if you want to feel that you're kind of being taken a proactive part in your own wellness straight away. I really enjoyed all of that. You know, it's a very active but gentle invitation. So I hope it goes from strength to strength. And you do, Ben. Apologies for the somewhat abrupt end there. We started talking about Netflix recommendations and just generally having a little chit chat, which was very nice. So I hope you enjoyed finding out all about Ben and rap, which is fantastic, and I hope you have a really good week, and I hope you take the opportunity to this week to focus on and take care of your own mental health. I think the wellness toolbox practice is a brilliant idea, and just as a little invitation this week, I'd say to you, how about just making a list or a collection of things that represent the things that make you feel hopeful or make you feel happy or comfort you or relax you or inspire you or distract you when you need those things, whatever those things might be, watching Netflix, going for a walk in the woods, whatever those things might be. And I'll see you next time. Thank you very much for listening.